is Common Sense Radio. Straightforward and no excuses.
All right. Come on now.
This is the Steve Gruber Show.
Call me crazy.
Ooh, yeah.
What I said was perfectly right and spot on accurate.
Boy's got a mouth like a cannon, always shooting at all.
Stop. Yeah, stop. I mean, you're way off script.
Got it in me. Gonna quit until it all comes out.
Hey, boy.
Yeah, you know, it's not cynical, it's common sense.
Pay attention to me when I'm talking to you.
I'm gonna rock the nation.
Genuine, accountable, and wrong. Here is Steve Gruber.
All right, and welcome to it, my friends. It's the Steve Gruber Show on a Monday. Iowa in a week. Man, it just seems that... Seems interesting, doesn't it? Already here we are. And by the way, your Super Bowl teams are set. Denver able to stop. The Patriots getting into the red zone, what, three times in the last 6 or 7 minutes? Scored once, couldn't get the end. A blown extra point earlier in the game meant that they had to go for two, didn't get it. So it is. So Peyton Manning and the Broncos on the way to the Super Bowl. And this argument, one friend of mine, yeah. Peyton Manning is the greatest quarterback of all time. No, not even in the top five when you put the numbers to it. Numbers don't lie. Tom Brady's not the best. Well, Tom Brady, according to the numbers, is one of the best top five anyhow. At any rate, let's see here. So you've got the Panthers, Cam Newton, the Broncos led by Peyton Manning, and there you go. With a week to go, here's what we're going to do for you. We're going to put out our own. The Gruber Caucus is up at Steve Gruber Show Facebook page, You can vote in either the Republican or the Democratic Caucus. Please pick just one. Your computer is supposed to let you allow to do one, but if just don't go through and pad it, all right? All right, just go through and pick your player. Or your candidate. Right now, Donald Trump getting about 58% of the vote on the Republican side. We have dozens of people voting already. Again, that's at the Steve Gruber Show Facebook page. By the way, Donald Trump was on Face the Nation yesterday on the CBS program Face the Nation, and he was talking to host John Dickerson, his fellow Republican. And when talking about his fellow Republican candidate, Texas Senator Ted Cruz, he talked about the problem that he has with his presidential eligibility, which Trump has used to his advantage greatly recently. And on the program, Trump talked about the fact that if Cruz still won the nomination, he would support him. It's cut to. Go ahead and take it.
Well, it depends on where he's from. In other words, he's got a problem. He, in my opinion, I mean, it's looking more and more. As you noticed, a number of very top constitutional lawyers have come and said he was born in Canada. He didn't tell people. He said he didn't know about it. Until 15 months ago, he was a Canadian citizen. He was joint with the United States, but he was a Canadian citizen until 15 months ago. He was a United States senator. I guess nobody figured this out. And he was a citizen of Canada. And there are a lot of people now that are saying he was born in Canada, he was born on Canada soil, on Canadian soil, and he cannot run. And as you know, I guess you probably heard last night, Illinois is looking at it very seriously. They may not even let him run in Illinois. They feel strongly about it. But other states are looking at it very seriously. And he may not be able to run. Yeah, if he got the nomination and if everything was fine, I would vote for Ted Cruz. I'd go for Ted Cruz. But
you would
I was putting that in relationship to his place of birth. There's a real question as to whether or not Ted Cruz is allowed to run for president. And I will tell you, the first thing, if he got the nomination, the first thing that would happen is that Democrats will bring a lawsuit against him. Lawrence Tribe of Harvard, okay, and many other people. I mean, many people beyond Lawrence Tribe have come down and said he's not entitled to run.
So
it's got to, whether he gets a declaratory judgment from the courts or does something, he's got to straighten that problem out because there's a big fat question mark.
Well, I don't know. He did. I don't believe that. I believe he's eligible to run. And I believe it's going to be irrelevant. You know, we got this sprint for the finish line. And Trump has taken the lead in Iowa again. He seems to say all of the right things at the right times. Okay, so we were with him Thursday evening in Las Vegas. And the discussion at hand, and Don Jr. was there, and Eric were there, his two sons, both NRA members. Both NRA members. And talking about the fact that when they grew up, they had a man in their life that took them shooting and hunting and fishing, and it meant the world to them. No, it was not Donald Trump. It was their grandfather, however. And I guess one of the things that Ivy and I talked about, and she pointed out, she said, listen, very well-spoken children, very well-rounded children, very decent children. And that's quite a measure of somebody, wouldn't you say? That's quite a measure of these two individuals, wouldn't you say? The point being, Donald Trump let his children and Don Jr. and Eric are both NRA life members. Life members. And I had somebody ask me, well, how long have they been NRA members? Well, I don't know that, but I know that in 2010, Donald Trump Jr. and his brother Eric went on safari in Zimbabwe. Photos from that safari were obtained without permission, posted online. The hunt included elephant, Cape buffalo, leopard, and crocodile. Those images drew the expected vitriol from anti-hunting extremists such as PETA and the Humane Society of the United States, HSUS, and other organizations that want to ban all hunting worldwide. And Don Jr. back in 2010 tweeted this, "I am a hunter, and for that, I make no apologies." And that's beautiful. So, I mean, here's the thing when it comes to the Second Amendment. When it comes to hunting and the Second Amendment, the two biggest lobbyists in the White House, if Donald Trump were elected president, are his two sons. I'd say that's a pretty strong lobbyist group. They are both life members of the National Rifle Association. Don Jr. has been on at least 7 safaris. He shoots competition shotguns. And so they're fellow shooters and hunters, and so therefore, that goes a long way for me as to who Donald Trump would be as president when it comes to the Second Amendment, when it comes to defending environmental issues, when it comes to those that hunt and fish in national parks. These are people that are they'll be more like, I would believe, more like Teddy Roosevelt than Barack Obama and Bill Clinton, who just want to run a fence around everything and keep everybody out. There you have it. It's the Steve Gerber Show, where you get it all. Don't forget to vote at the Steve Gerber Show Facebook page. Who are you going to vote for? Go vote for your candidate now. We'll give you some updated numbers in just a moment.
Genuine Michigan common sense on display every day.
All right, well, the results are starting to pile up here. Dozens of you voting so far, but we'd like to have a lot more. Go to the Steve Gerber Show, select your candidate, and vote Donald Trump. Donald Trump garnering the majority of the vote at about 52.5%, I suppose. Over 52% of the vote going to Donald Trump. Marco Rubio, Ted Cruz running pretty close for second place here, but Trump has as many votes as they do combined. Rand Paul picking up a few, and Ben Carson picking up a couple, but overall it's a Donald Trump race, which is the way that a lot of us are seeing it. Newsweek's Michelle Gorman here, staff writer at the magazine, where she covers breaking news and general interest stories. And the question before the court today: can Sarah Palin help Donald Trump, and does it really matter? Michelle, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me. That's the million-dollar question.
Yeah, I mean, it gave Tina Fey something to do over the weekend. We know that, but other than that, I don't really care about Sarah Palin. I don't think a lot of people do. I don't think it helps or hurts. What is your take on it?
Well, that's the thing. But if you think about it, Trump and Palin have been in the news nonstop since she endorsed him last Tuesday. As you said, SNL even did something on it. Like, it's everywhere you go, everywhere you turn, it's Palin Trump. Now, I mean, people ask or wonder why this happened now. I think the focus was on Iowa. I think that Trump isn't necessarily concerned about anything past next week. The Iowa caucuses, remember, are a week from today. The most recent poll shows he has a 5-point lead over Cruz in Iowa. He actually pulled ahead of Cruz. He's taken support from Cruz's supporters from the Tea Partiers and the evangelicals in that state. Trump has a double-digit lead in both New Hampshire and South Carolina, so it seems like he doesn't even really need to worry about the later primary states. So it's interesting how this endorsement happened, when it happened, and if it really is making a difference, or if Trump's just being Trump and taking this lead as he has since he announced his candidacy last June.
I think that he continues to make smart plays. I was in Las Vegas this past week for the SHOT Show, the biggest gun show in the world, as you probably know. And Donald Trump showed up with his two sons, who are life members of the NRA. You know, it seems that where he goes, he has the right message for the people there, whether it's the security at the southern border, how to deal with terrorism, the fact that America is getting raw deals from the TPP to what we've done with Iran and so forth. It seems to me, no matter what you think of Donald Trump, that he seems to hit the right notes all the way through. And if he was, I had a couple of people that I know well, said, listen, if he would temper it a little bit, if he would tone it down a little bit, I would vote for him. These are people that I never thought would vote for Trump. And basically they're of the opinion now that if he tones it down a little bit, becomes more of a mainstream guy, that they could support him going forward. I mean, is that the kind of pulse and sense that you're getting out there?
Yes, and he actually admitted that yesterday on one of the Sunday morning news shows. He was asked if he would turn down that rhetoric at all, and he said, quote, of course, which is interesting because it doesn't seem like that is happening anytime soon. But he also seems to just be immune to these political gaffes that he has had. And we know that Palin, you know, when she was running in 2008, she couldn't name a newspaper that she read, and she quoted, you know, was saying Alaska was her extent of foreign policy and its proximity to Russia. So maybe in that sense, Palin, if Trump is immune to these gaffes that he has, well, maybe Palin can help bolster that. And in that sense, they're both kind of prone to those two things. But I don't know if you heard about his comments relating to guns. I believe it was either Friday or Saturday he was saying that he could just go into Fifth Ave and shoot at people in New York City and he would still be leading in the polls. So
that's rhetorical. Come on, anybody that takes that seriously. And I saw some of the lefties take that seriously. Come on, Michelle. That's rhetorical nonsense. The point is, I could shoot somebody in the street. It would make no difference. I get what he's saying. And I've heard people, my own father included, say things that were a lot more abrasive than that to make the same point. So that's just silliness.
I mean, but like you said, it does anger some people, so it's interesting. You know,
it only angers, hold on, Michelle, it only angers people that were angry with Trump to begin with. It doesn't anger anybody who's going to vote for him or takes him, who, you know, come on. You know, everybody's offended about everything in this day and age, and nobody gives a rat's behind about silly nonsense about, oh, you know, he's going to shoot people in the street. That's not what he meant. Newsweek's Michelle Gorman with us today. You know, it's akin to to me, it's more like the Beatles saying they're more popular than Jesus. That's really what it comes down to me. Now, that would be offensive, and I would see how, but it's a similar kind of rhetorical remark to me.
Yeah, I can see that, and you know, he's, again, in the headlines for, you know, making something like that. So he definitely does strategically make these comments, I think, anyway.
Yeah. Did it offend you?
I just think it's, you know, it gets to be comical to some extent, and then, you know, he's questioned about it, and then he always just kind of has some answer that kind of saves his butt.
Would you vote for him? Do you have any friends that would vote for him?
I do have friends who would vote for him. You know, I think it's a very serious race. He has a chance of winning, as we've seen.
Yeah, and here's the thing. Now, where do you live? Where do you call home?
New York City.
See, and that's important. And here's why that's important. Donald Trump actually resonates with a lot of people in New York City. And the other thing that people haven't talked about, Donald Trump resonates with union workers. Why? Because every building he's ever built in places like New York City, he always works with the union, doesn't he?
Yes, that's true. That is very true.
Always works with the union, making him very popular among a group of people that, you know, formerly would support Democrats. Donald Trump, you know, the pundits have written him off since the day he announced his candidacy. The pundits were wrong in summer and in Labor Day. And at Thanksgiving, and they're still wrong. And they say, well, he can't win the general. Well, I shouldn't believe them now. I'll give you 10 seconds for the last word, Michelle.
we'll see. Bloomberg will enter that race if Trump wins the primary.
Yeah.
So that'll be fun to have him in. But no, I'm very, very excited to see what happens next week. After
well, you know, Bloomberg can get in, but there's enough liberals in the race already, in my opinion. All right, Michelle, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Michigan, born and raised with Midwestern values and Michigan common sense.
All right, welcome back to it. Here's a, you know, I was watching some girls' basketball yesterday. I do that a lot. Go figure, right? But here's something for you. Minnesota youth basketball team has been ejected from its league for being too good. For real. Now the coach, parents, and players are crying foul. The Rogers Area Youth Basketball Association, RABA, forced to the sidelines by the Northwest Suburban Basketball League because the team was 3-0. According to the league, the girls are too talented, said the coach. Because other teams in the league do not want to play RABA due to the skill level of the team. Again, just hand out participation ribbons and we'll all be good. Hand out participation ribbons and we'll all be good. Shifting back to the conversation here, and I direct you to the to that post in USA Today. That post in USA Today about Flint and the whole matter being overblown. David Mastio saying that, you know, the fact of the matter is lead levels in America continue to come down and down and down. Not dismissing what's going on in Flint, but to give us the notion that somehow we're poisoning all of our children could be a gross exaggeration. Paul Larkin here directs the Heritage Foundation's project to counter abuse of the criminal law. Another government caused water problem and a bit of a cover up. When referring to Flint. Paul, welcome to the program.
I'm glad to be here.
What is your take when you look at all the things going on with this water situation in Flint?
Well, I don't know all the facts, and it also seems that no one yet knows all the facts. It sounds like it's been a terrible tragedy for the people of Flint, but who is responsible is difficult to decipher from all of the newspaper articles.
Well, you know, and again, is it a terrible tragedy or is it something that's been exaggerated? I say that because, you know, in 2005, Michigan completed a collection of 500,000 lead blood tests from kids. And back then, 26% of the kids tested, more than one in four had blood levels that they would be concerned with today, compared to 10% of the kids in Flint. I mean, it was 2.5 times just 10 years ago. Now, that's not to say what happened in Flint is good. But good Lord, back in the 1970s, it was 88% of the people tested would have tested above the levels where we are now. I mean, actually, the reduction of lead in the bodies of Americans is a huge victory for America. Am I wrong?
Oh, no, no. If you look at it from a long-term perspective, America's health is far better today because there is less lead. I don't know to what extent, because I'm not a scientist, that's due to improvements in how we deliver water versus improvements in air quality due to eliminating lead from gasoline. Both factors, I'm sure, are important. No, you're right that in the long term, we're moving in the right direction. The problem here is that as you move in the right direction, you get a new baseline. And the people in Flint, unfortunately, fell below that baseline because of decisions made by people who were responsible for the water supply.
Well, people, at the local level, at the state level of the DEQ, at the federal level, the Environmental Protection Agency, I give credit to our governor, who I don't agree with on a lot of things, but I give him credit for this, for saying, listen, I just heard him again on the news this morning, national news, saying, listen, the buck stops with me. It's my responsibility, and I accept that responsibility, and we're going to make everything as open as possible and fix the problem. How often today in America do you hear a politician say, yeah, it's on me? Yeah, this is my responsibility. That's almost never. And yet the left continues to attack him and blast him for poisoning, the poisoning of an American city and so on and so forth. Folks, the lead's been in the system for decades. I mean, go ahead.
No, I agree that anybody who says it's my job to take care of a problem, the buck stops with me, is a rarity in American politics today. It's a rarity in America generally today, and in that regard, the governor seems now to be really getting himself in a position where he can learn everything he needs to learn personally and do everything he needs to do personally to try to remedy this problem.
You know, and the other thing that irks me is that, you've got Jesse Jackson and Michael Moore and the very predictable Rent-A-Riot crew that show up with their circus. Oh, my God, these Republicans are trying to poison people because they're black and they're poor. I'm like, really? The fact of the matter is Ann Arbor, the home of the University of Michigan, might have similar problems with their lead piping. Kalamazoo might have similar problems with the lead piping in that city, as will scores, if not hundreds or thousands of cities around this country, both black and white and mixed race. And for them, it makes me angry. It disgusts me, frankly, that these people are allowed to make it into a race issue or some issue of Republicans, allowing people to get sick. It's such vulgar nonsense that we should never let it stand.
I think from the newspaper articles I've read, there also seems to be a great deal of politics that have influenced this whole matter, that there's a big problem in terms of Republican versus Democratic criticisms and defenses going back and forth. Everybody is trying to make a political issue out of what at bottom should be a scientific and public policy issue.
Yeah, and that's my point. It seems that we're going forward with the right plan. And to be quite honest with you, if Flint hadn't, squandered its resources for decade after decade, there would have been no need for state oversight with an emergency manager that they're trying to blame for the change in the water supply, which had, all he did is approve something that was voted on by the city council, my understanding. At any rate, I think the bigger crisis, I think you're right, Paul, is looking at how are we going to deal with this in the next 1,000 cities that have, and there will be, that have these old pipes and this old infrastructure. What do you do about it?
Well, it seems that, unfortunately, there's been a disagreement between amongst federal, state, and local officials as to whether the water was safe because of the different types of testing that was done, and whether this particular chemical should have been added to the water supply to help lead be maintained in the pipes and not leach out.
Of course it should have been, yeah.
If there's scientific disagreement, then we have a very big problem in that regard because we don't have any experts we can rely on.
Yeah, we're with Paul Larkin from the Heritage Foundation, and I guess, what I don't like is the typical, you're right, there's things that should have been done, common sense things that were not done, that doesn't make any sense that they were not done. It's just standard practice that didn't happen, but the ball was dropped at the local level and the state level and the federal level when it came to preserving and taking care of the water supply. I'll give you 20 seconds for the last word, Paul.
Well, I just want to say that, unfortunately, the fact that we're in a presidential campaign probably has added to the politicization of the issue, and that is usually a recipe for finding the worst possible result.
There you go. I greatly appreciate it, Paul. Thanks for stopping in.
Hey, my pleasure.
Paul Larkin from the Heritage Foundation, everybody, here on the Steve Gruber Show on this Monday. By the way, if you got any thoughts today, 888-900-9966. We also want you to vote. Go to the Steve Gruber Show on Facebook. Click like, tell your friends, share it around, and vote or the one candidate you think would be best. You can vote either in the Republican, the Gruber primary is a Republican, or the Gruber primary is a Democrat, whichever you want to do, and we'll see who comes out on top. We'll do this for the next several days. Dozens of you have voted already. Tell your friends. We'll be right back on the Steve Gruber Show.
Delivering Michigan common sense with a big dose of truth and honesty.
Slow down, you move too fast. You got to make the morning last. Just kicking down the cobblestones, looking for fun and fun.
All right, welcome to it. It is Monday. And make sure you go to the Steve Gruber Show Facebook page and vote. It's the Gruber Caucus. Yeah, we're going to figure out who's going to win this thing. Donald Trump, well ahead right now. Dozens of you have voted so far. A lot of you have voted so far. I appreciate that. Again, Steve Gruber Show Facebook page. Megan Barth, our next guest, founder and proprietor of ReaganBaby.com and a big cheerleader for Megan. Fill in the blank now.
Megan.
Well, I get
Steve,
that.
Steve
I get
Gruber.
That. Yeah, well, I appreciate that as well. But give me an idea here. Who's going to win this thing?
I think Iowa caucus, I think it's most likely going to go to Trump. I don't think that Sarah Palin's endorsement hurt him. I don't think that Phyllis Schlafly's endorsement hurt him. And I don't think that the kind words that Jerry Falwell Jr. gave to him after he spoke at Liberty University will hurt him. I don't know what's going to hurt Trump except for perhaps his mouth might get in the way and his spokesperson's mouth by the name of Katrina Pearson. There's a lot of back and forth, kind of going back and forth over Twitter about some of the things that she said in the past. And so, you know, that might damage him a little bit. And also the National Review article. I don't think that necessarily hurt him where they took a stand against Trump, the conservatives.
I don't think it hurts him at all. I don't think it matters, you know. And here's the thing to the folks at National Review. Hey, guys, if Trump wins, well, we're just going to stay home. He may not be the conservative you want, but he's far more conservative than, say, Bernie Sanders, isn't he? I mean, just going out on a limb here. But I think Trump wins Iowa, New Hampshire, South Carolina, and fourth on the list is Nevada, if I'm not mistaken, right where you are.
That's right, right where you left, just got back from.
Yeah, you know, and here's the other thing, you know, and I commend Trump for, you know, resonating with the right group of people at the right time. He showed up at the SHOT Show, and he brought Don Jr. and Eric, both life members of the National Rifle Association. So I did a little bit of research because I had people ask me, well, how long have they been life members? And I'm like, I have no idea. I said for probably the last several years. I found an article from 2010 in the National Rifleman Association magazine from the NRA, where they had just returned, Don Jr. had just returned from a hunting safari in Zimbabwe and said, I'm a hunter and I do not apologize for it, because he got some grief because some pictures leaked out. Okay, that was 6 years ago. So apparently it's not something new that he did just to appease his father. And for me, from somebody who, you know, strongly believes in the Second Amendment, who does hunt like I do, the two best lobbyists in the world are Don Jr. and Eric. I mean, I'm not too worried about Donald Trump's position on guns or hunting or anything else, because he's got his two sons, adult sons, who believe in it, who are part of the lifestyle.
Well, yeah, and I think, you know, I'll be the first to say that I really don't believe that Trump is a conservative, especially when you go down the conservative checklist. But then we also have to say, well, has the GOP been conservative since Reagan? We've been pushed. The GOP base has been pushed towards moderation for as long as I can remember. We were continued to being told that conservative values aren't going to win. So everyone waters them down. And the GOP watered it down by running moderates, and they continued to lose. They ran Romney. The evangelicals stayed home. If the evangelicals would have showed up, Barack Obama would have been a first-term president. So here you have Donald Trump rising from the GOP ashes, saying that he's going to make America great again. He's going to secure our border, and tapping on all of the anger points that the base has. And he's pulling in a lot more people into the base. In Nevada, he's got 22% of the Hispanic vote. When you look at the African American vote, sure, there are 70% of African Americans or 78% of African Americans who don't like him. Well, that still makes 22% that does. And Reagan only got 9% of the African American vote. So he has this ability to draw in demographics that the GOP certainly hasn't. Whatever reason, but it wasn't certainly that the GOP was the champions of conservatism. National Review might be, and I respect National Review, and I respect a lot of those people that submitted articles. But I think that the time for purists to come forward and say, "Well, he can't be the nominee because he's not a purist," kind of falls on deaf ears.
No, absolutely. You know, and here's the thing: you know, the evangelicals that stayed home. I can tell you this, Mitt Romney was far more conservative than Barack Obama. I mean, come on. I mean, that's the point. And it's ludicrous. Absolutely ludicrous. I mean, if you want more of Sonia Sotomayor or Elena Kagan, you know, allow somebody like Hillary or Bernie to get the presidency as opposed to Donald Trump. I mean, you trust that more? I mean, you said the checklist, the conservative checklist. I find that so offensive.
Well, it is, because it's very short-sighted. So you look at what we have now because the evangelicals stayed home. Well, now we have a lot to undo. So the challenge to the conservatives, especially some of the conservatives that said they'll stay home should Trump get the nomination, well, shame on you. This is about unity at a time where we can't afford to dig our heels in and cast aspersions at those who aren't meeting a conservative purist checklist. We're looking at a difference between socialism, Marxism, really, and capitalism.
It is Marxism. Yeah, you know,
it is Marxism.
And fairly put, who can survive that checklist? Ted Cruz, maybe? Ted Cruz... I've said from the beginning, he's too strident. He's too, you know, he's too much of an ideologue. He won't make a deal with anybody in anything. Well, the Constitution says this. That's great, Ted. But if you want to accomplish something and actually, like, turn the debt back and start saving us some money and put the country back on track, you can't be so, you have to be a little flexible somewhere. I'll give you 20 seconds for the last word.
No, you're absolutely right, and I admire Cruz for his principled stand, and I have for a long time. I just question his ability to win the general.
That's
my
point.
We need somebody to win the general.
I like his principles, but you have to be able to play ball. Megan Barth, ReaganBaby.com. Find out more right there. Thank you, Megan.
Thank you.